This is episode 69 and focuses on Dean Barker and colleagues' pedagogical case about Maria. This is an audio version of the Peppern blog that can be found at www.peprn.com/news.aspx. Rewriting the acceptable stories about women and sport. Girls are girly and they don't play aggressive, explosive sports like football. They might throw like a girl or hit like a girl. There might be a big girl's blouse and they might cry, but they don't gain kudos from being sporty. These commonly held beliefs are increasingly being challenged. And yet many of our common sense views, when challenged, are nonsensical. They need to be rewritten, and yet they go unchallenged and remain to provide unnecessary obstacles to participation. Maria. Unlike many girls her age, 14, Maria spends her Saturdays halfway up the football terraces listening to the local fans chanting for their team. She'd love to be able to watch. She'd like nothing more, in fact. But she is selling ice creams and cold drinks and has her back to the game. As an avid and devoted football fan, she doesn't think there's a better place to be, but she's not doing this for the sake of fandom, but because the money she earns will go to her own football club. When she leaves the ground, she takes the bus back to the apartment she shares with her mother and three siblings. Her father, separated from Maria's mother, but not his family, lives in a small one-bedroom apartment nearby. As Maria walks into the house, she notices that the figure on the TV is speaking Italian, which is in stark contrast to the Swiss that the football fans have been chanting in. Her mother misses Sicily and likes to be reminded of her Italian roots on a daily basis. 2 days later, Maria heads to school. She'd like to be wearing a tracksuit, but the teachers don't like the children to dress for recreation. Her first lesson is maths, and she doesn't feel she's very good at it. She knows she needs to work hard, but it makes her tired, numb even. Her mind wanders to Cristiano Ronaldo and his goal against Milan on Saturday, and then to her recent trip back to Sicily and the games of football she played with the local boys. I had never seen a girl play football before, but they let her play anyway. Later the same day, Maria is in a French lesson and has just finished topping the vocabulary test. She feels good, but that might be because she's now heading to football training. It doesn't start for a couple of hours and she stops off to see her cousin and talk football. What else? They talk about her game at the weekend and Maria tells Mario that she scored both the goals in her team's 2-1 victory and then saw a guy talking to a coach and asking about her age. He thought, the guy who turned out to be a scout, that Maria could get into the national squad, but also said it would help if she got a Swiss passport as soon as possible. Maria heads for training. She's 40 minutes early but uses the time to do more training. After all, the more training she does, the better player she will be and the more valuable she will be to her team. Her friend Valentia arrives, and while they train, the girls reminisce about the days when they used to play with the boys and agree that they would learn more if they were still playing with the boys. They practice with the ball Valentia has brought in her bag, and as Maria performs a skillful turn, she realises that, for the first time today, she feels alive and free. Let's look at the pedagogical case in more detail. Looking through the lenses of critical ethnicity, gender, and acculturation psychology, self-determination theory, Barker and colleagues build their pedagogical case. Their aim is to help teachers and coaches better understand how they might support a girl like Maria, who wants to reformulate the acceptable stories that girls tell of sport. The literature in critical ethnicity is increasingly exploring race and ethnicity as they relate to and impact on sport and pedagogy, e.g. through studies of racism, inclusion and exclusion, and identity construction. Drawing on the work of Bourdieu and the idea of cultural capital, Barker and colleagues argue that individuals with migration backgrounds sometimes have less cultural capital in sports settings, i.e. knowledge about training and competition, dress, work ethic and so forth, and therefore they navigate these environments less successfully than others. On the surface, it appears that Maria doesn't lack cultural capital. She dresses right and eschews makeup. She knows how to be a fan, is committed to training, and is clearly skillful. At the same time, she is lacking in other forms of capital. She doesn't know the right people and isn't connected. In terms of scouting, she lacks a network of teachers, parents, managers, and regional coaches to talk her up. This would be a significant advantage, but people with migration backgrounds rarely have these. She doesn't have a member of the family who played for the national team, or a father who is friendly with the national under-19s coach, and she is dependent on her own coach to facilitate her movement into the networks that exist in higher levels of the sport. It is important to note that ethnic difference should not be equated with problems, but some have argued that individuals can be caught between cultures. One, in Maria's case, that discourages female sport participation, and another that is more open to it. Changing focus in exploring social theory, Barker and colleagues argue that gender is seen as socially constructed and performed through, for example, media representations of athletes, sporting organisations, women coaches, and athletes' sporting experiences. In many ways, Maria is challenging and seeking to reconstruct these masculine and feminine ideas. In both Italy and Switzerland, national gender stereotypes shape women's soccer. The women's game is on the margins and is treated with stark inequity. As a consequence, many women face opposition regarding their choice of sports. Maria hasn't, and perhaps her exceptional story has the potential to reconstruct traditional gender ideologies. She challenges the assumption that women are not suited to play sports traditionally played by men, and by engaging in aggressive tackling and explosive shooting, she redefines corporal ideas. But she may face negative reactions from members of other communities. For example, the lesbian prejudices that have been attached to women soccer players. Maria's conversation with her friend about boys' football and a game with the boys in Sicily both go some way to reinforcing traditional ideals of femininity. They, the girls, would be better if they still played with the boys. This suggests that not only do boys play a different but also a better game. In this way, she demonstrates a deficit approach to her performance by voicing her belief that women can't play as well as men. What a person values, what a person eats and drinks, what language a person uses, and in what environment a person feels most comfortable all impact on that individual's attitudes, preferences, and behaviours, actual practices. From an acculturation psychology perspective, this can result in one of four pro-typical acculturation strategies: biculturalism, separation, assimilation, or marginalisation. Maria seems willing to adopt an integrative, bicultural approach, in as much as she values her Italian heritage, but chooses a sport that is rarely played by girls in Sicily. However, developing a bicultural identity is not automatic, but is instead an active process. It needs motivation from both the immigrant and the members of the host society. In Maria's case, she feels valued and endorsed through her football and isn't being punished by her parents for developing intercultural contact. Football helps, from a self-determination perspective, to develop her autonomy. It gives her life meaning and helps her to deal with school pressures. She talks freely about football and has been left to decide her future career as a football player. She's respected, and the prospect of playing in the Swiss national team is further incentive to becoming more integrated into Swiss society. Viewed as a whole, and through a pedagogical lens, Maria's coaches and teachers can start to look at how they acknowledge or disrupt the expectation that players should know how to dress, act, talk, etc., and thus be naturals. Should they teach players how things are done, or should they promote the value of performance behaviours such as work ethic, tactical thinking, and motoric excellence? In doing so, and in thinking differently, we help athletes to develop identities outside of sport. In Maria's case, this would be an identity as someone who can do maths, because the same ethics are applied there as they are in sport. Such a step, and others like it, help us to reflect on the kinds of taken-for-granted assumptions that predominate in physical education and sport. Particularly, and in this case, how common-sense assumptions define what it means to be an athlete, female, and/or have a particular cultural heritage. This allows us to change narratives and allows girls like Maria to do something unusual. It allows her to reformulate acceptable stories about women's sport, which includes passivity, as a consequence of a need to be seen to do the right thing, or, in Maria's case, just to be seen by a scout. Athletes can adopt submissive or passive relationships with their coaches, where they do what they are told to do. By rewriting this expectation, athletes gain a sense of control over their participation and feel that their need for autonomy, competence, and relatedness are being met. Only by recognising, criticising and rewriting our common sense beliefs can meaningful and enduring changes be made. Maria and thousands of girls and women like her and from many different walks of life are challenging the stories that we tell. Isn't it time we started to really listen? So in concluding, how does this discussion relate to you, your sessions and your context? Did it make you think or consider something? I'd love to hear your thoughts and so would others, so please share at www.peprn.com/news.aspx. Thanks for listening, and join me next week for the next Pepin podcast, where I'll discuss Fiona Chambers and colleagues' pedagogical case about William. Thank you.